PMP Network. With us right now is Tony DeFranco. You might remember the DeFranco family with Tony DeFranco having songs like Heartbeat is a Love Beat and Save the Last Dance for Me. And Tony joins us live. Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. Nice to talk to you.
Great. Thank you.
All of us, of course, remember the infectious song of Heartbeat, It's a Love Beat. You guys were from Canada, right?
Originally from Canada, yeah.
Yeah. And I understand that you were discovered, actually, by the man who owned was it Tiger Beat magazine?
Correct, yeah. I was the publisher of Tiger Beat and many other teen magazines. He had received some photos on his desk we sent to his editor. I forget her name. It was Sharon something. And she approached him, and he flew us out to Hollywood, and we did some demos, and Heartbeat was one of them, and one thing led to another, and it was a blast. It was fun.
I ought to give Sharon Lee some credit.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was Sharon Lee's desk.
Yeah,
it was
thanks.
On.
Helping my memory cells here.
That's okay. So, now, you originally, when you were guys were touring Canada, you were the DeFranco Quintet.
Correct.
And when you came here, they packaged you as the DeFranco family?
Right. Well, actually, no, we... Originally, when we were younger, I was five, I think we went with Quintet. And as we got older, we switched it to family. So I don't think that was anything that came from Charles Laufer, but it was just a matter of progression. Everybody was asking, what's a quintet?
So, we should mention that you hadn't exactly grown up. You were 13 years old when this all was going on.
Right.
Now, I remember the pictures of you. You were a cute little guy, and all the girls loved you. And you had some foxy sister there, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they still look great.
Yeah. I like the older one myself, but...
I'll tell her.
I don't know how old she is now, but I don't even want to hear about it, actually.
Yeah, I don't think she wants me to tell you.
Yeah, I don't think so. But, so what happened was you came down stateside, and the stuff that you sent, I guess you guys sent a tape and some publicity package to Sharon Lee, and it was sat on her desk, and finally Charles Laufer from Tiger Beat checked it out and liked what he saw,
right,
and brought you guys to L.A., Now, what was it like when you guys came here? First of all, were you scared? What did you feel like when you auditioned or went in there to record for him?
I just felt like a duck out of water, actually. I mean, being a 13-year-old, or at the time, 12-year-old kid from Canada who had never even been to Hollywood, or let's say never even heard of Hollywood, let alone been there. So I was blown away by simple things like palm trees, in L.A., blown away by Disneyland. It was, you know, and then one thing led to another, and then it would go to his house, Laufer's house, and sing live in front of him and his staff. And, yeah, I was scared. It was definitely all new to me.
And it's interesting to note that one of those three songs you recorded was Heartbeat is a Love Beat.
Right, correct.
Now, when that was released, I assume that... You must have known, you could tell, actually, listen, that song is such a hook on it that it was going to be a hit.
Right.
Did he feel that confident as well?
Well, no, I think Laufer made a point of telling us, hardly anybody makes it in this business. It's really hard to have a hit record, and we're going to do our best to help you have a hit record, but don't get your hopes up. And my attitude, because I was a naive 12-year-old boy, I never doubted it. We were in the studio, and I loved the song. It sounded great. And I just assumed, you know, hey, when we put this out, it's going to be on the radio. So maybe it was the power of positive thinking or something, but it happened.
Well, it didn't just happen. It became huge. It was number three on Billboard's Hot 100 and was number one in Cashbox Singles Chart and sold 2 million copies.
Right.
What was that like? Now, here you guys are, as you mentioned, feeling like a fish out of water, duck out of water, whatever you want to put it,
right,
coming to this country, and all of a sudden you've got a number one song.
It was overwhelming because everything from A to Z changed. I mean, for me, life was riding my bicycle, playing street hockey with my friends, and then you go to being on Bandstand, having your record on the radio, and everybody's pulling at you for your attention, and girls are screaming at you, and you're getting these letters and huge canvas bags of letters from the post office.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very overwhelming.
Not only did you have a number one song, but your picture was on, I mean, because the guy that owned Tiger Beat was the guy who was promoting you. You were in every one of his magazines. There were articles, Tony's Private Love Diary, you know.
Right.
It's an amazing situation, and I would think most 13-year-olds would be overwhelmed by it.
I was definitely overwhelmed by it, but, you know, as I look back on it now as an adult, I quite clearly see that it was a great promotional tool for Laufer. If he was going to sign us to his label and, you know, to the deal that we had with him, obviously it'll be beneficial for him to put us in his magazine as much as he can.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great tool, and it helped sell the record, I'm sure.
The only thing I'm thinking of in your case, a lot of these guys I've talked to before on the show, from David Cassidy to Bobby Sherman, were solo act. Well, David Cassidy was with the Partridge Family, but Bobby was a solo act. You were with a family.
Right.
Did that keep you anchored a bit?
Yeah, very much so, because we were a tight unit. It wasn't as though we were manufactured just to go up on stage when Laufer discovered us. This is something we had been doing since I was 4 or 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very comfortable for me to look around on stage and see my brothers and sisters and performing together. It definitely kept me grounded.
You mentioned American Bandstand. You guys also did like Sonny and Cher and The Dinah Show and Mike Douglas. And I understand you also were on a special with Jack Benny. That must have been special.
Oh, it was great. It was his second farewell special. because I guess he was said farewell once and he just didn't want to go away. He was a hysterical guy. And I actually am looking right now at a picture of him and I on the cover of TV Guide wearing the same clothes.
Wow.
And that was fun. He was something else.
What was he like in real life?
He was actually quiet, but he was a man of very few words, but when he spoke, everybody moved, and they moved quickly.
Hmm.
So, but I thought he was very polite to me, very kind.
What about Sonny and Cher? What were they like?
You know what? We never met them.
Really?
Yeah, it was a matter of doing our bit or our spot on the show. And they said, thank you. And I was like, well, we're Sonny and Cher. They go, oh, they're not here right now. And it's like, oh, no, we'd love to meet them. But
wow.
Never had the opportunity.
That's amazing.
At least not at the taping, anyway.
Mm. Now, obviously, the first song you ever released was actually the biggest one you ever did. What was it like as you started seeing things changing around? Music was changing, and the other thing that I wonder about is also the fact that the group, that the record label changed the group to, at one point it was Tony DeFranco and the DeFranco family. Was there any jealousy within the family of that whole situation?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, my brothers and I, we're still close, and it was quite clearly I was the front man and always had been, and
mm-hmm.
once I was doing the vocals, there was just an understanding. But there might have been some underlying jealousy there, but I don't think it was too much of a problem. We got through it okay.
You know, one of the things that changed around 1974 or so was your voice. I mean, you were growing up.
Yeah.
How did that affect the music and the way the group was perceived?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I think back on that now, and when people email me or write me or contact me and they mention Heartbeat, they love that song. But I'm wondering what would have happened if we had waited a year or two with my voice changed to have that hit record. Because now it's still, when people talk about Heartbeat, they talk about it as a great song, but it was bubblegum.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with where my voice was at the time.
Right.
So it's, I don't know, it's a question I think of often.
Well, you mentioned bubblegum, and I'm glad you did, because as your voice changed and the group changed and you guys got older, you didn't want to do bubblegum anymore. You wanted to do your own thing, and that's really what caused the break between you and Laufer, right?
Yes, pretty much. He and his people that worked for him were pretty adamant about us constantly doing types of songs that we thought weren't right for us. We wanted to grow and develop and be better. And to be honest with you, Heartbeat was a great start. It was an original song. It wasn't a remake. People loved it. Abracadabra was an original song. It was fun. Yes, it was bubblegum, but it was fun. And then we did a cover of Save the Last Dance for Me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what sort of triggered it in their mind, that it would be a lot easier to have a hit record if you do a cover of somebody else's old tune.
Right.
And I think, you know, Save the Last Dance for Me was great. I loved doing that song, but I think they got it in their head that you should just be doing covers. You know, they'd come to me and say, hey, why don't you do Put Your Head on My Shoulder, which is a great song. I'm not, you know, I'm not dissing the song.
Mm-hmm.
But we personally thought it was a mistake to go in that direction.
I understand it. And they did, you know, We Belong Together, which was a 1958 song. And
exactly.
I can understand you guys feeling that way, as a matter of fact. And Save the Last Dance for Me, by the way, was pretty good. I mean, you and Betty did a nice job on that song.
Yeah, we had fun doing that song.
But I understand what you're saying. Now you actually produced some stuff on your own. What was the first song that you guys did on your own with some of the music that you wanted to do?
Well, you know, that's a tough one, because when we started going off in a different direction, he set us up, Lawford did, with mm-hmm. a producer named Keg Johnson. And at this point, disco was just starting to happen. So, you know, we had to take that into consideration.
Right.
So we did a song called Drummer Man. And another ballad called I Thought You Might Like to Know. And they were probably going in the right direction for that time, what was happening, you know, with disco and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But things were falling apart with the record label and management, and so ultimately those songs never were released.
Hmm. Maury McGovern recorded that I Thought You Might Like to Know song.
Did she do a cover of it?
Yeah, she did.
Interesting.
Hmm. And she was actually signed to the same label at the time.
Right, 20th.
Right.
We just had a reunion, I think it was about 4 months ago, and a lot of artists and label people and Russ Reagan, the president, we all had a great time together.
There's a great CD out. It's called The DeFranco Family, featuring Tony DeFranco. It's the greatest hits type of thing. And I understand it's available through DeFranco.com, right?
Yes, it is.
And that's DeFranco.com.
Correct.
And you can get on there and you can actually write a little letter to Tony, all you women out there who grew up loving that little boy. Well, he's a grown man now. If you want to send him a message, you can at DeFranco.com. What are you working on now?
I just finished working on a project for Word Records, coordinating a group called Point of Grace.
Oh, and we've had them on the show. They're a religious group.
Yes.
They're great, too.
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine, David Tyson, produced them, and he asked me to step in and help them do the contracts and just arrange it, because I know so many facets on that side. So I've been doing that on one side of my life, and I have a children's book publishing company that I started.
Oh.
And we have our first book out. It's called Mary Made a Pony's Tale. That's also available on our website.
Now, do you write the books, or you have some writers working for you?
Actually, my fiancée, Stacey Myers, wrote this one.
Oh.
And she illustrated it. It's a wonderful, wonderful story.
Now, does Stacey Myers know your background?
Yeah, she does.
Okay. So she knew from the beginning who you were when she was growing up, too? Is she your age?
She had no idea. We met somewhere. This is 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And she just asked, are you a normal guy that's not in the entertainment industry? And so I sort of lied to her.
Well, you can say no. So she actually did find out. She didn't associate the name DeFranco when you told her?
No, it didn't. It didn't ring a bell.
Wow. Because, I mean, instantly, most people think of the Heartbeat It's a Love Beat when they hear that name.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting is I think for a lot of people, our fame was fairly short-lived. I mean, probably it's kind of normal for nowadays. I think that most artists, they either have one hit or two hits.
Right.
And the amount of artists that are around from decade to decade, it's very few.
Mm.
I lost my train of thought, but what I was going to say was that if you... No, I totally lost what I was
going to say. That's okay. No, you were talking about the fact that many people don't follow it up and stuff like that. You know, it's interesting because you guys had a few hits, but it was only a certain amount of time, and that's what you were talking about, that she may not have known during that small time
right.
that
yeah,
you guys
across were. People daily.
Yeah.
Either they know and they go, DeFranco, oh, you know, there used to be a singer, and they go, that isn't you by a chance, and yes, it is, or they have no clue.
Right.
And it's a matter of their age.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they were at that time.
Exactly. You know, I just had on the other day Denny Zager.
Right.
Who had that huge hit in the year 25-25. And he's one of the only people in the world that had a number one hit for 6 weeks, the number one song of the year in 1969, and never had another song in the top 100.
He didn't even have another one.
Not,
wow.
Not even nothing.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing to me to have that kind of up and down. I mean, he was invited to Woodstock, and his manager decided that instead of going to Woodstock because it was a free gig, that they would instead open for Engelbert Humperdinck.
the decisions we make in life that at the time seem minor and are major.
That's it's kind of funny. I mean, and some of the stuff that seems major at the time is really minor.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way the life is.
That's true. But it's also the nature of this business. I mean, it's truly is. Most pop songs are ear candy, and between radio and people, it's here today, gone tomorrow. What do you think? You know, what
right.
do you got for us today? Okay, well that's nice. Who else is out there? That's just the nature of the business.
Now, are you back in Canada again, or are you in the United States now?
No, I'm in California.
So you never went back to Ontario, huh?
Only to visit my many, many relatives.
Now, when you guys were doing the thing, the music thing around the country and around the world, I understand you had some other countries where you were huge in.
Yeah, we sold a ton. We went gold in Japan, and we toured there, and that was such an unusual experience as a teenage boy, you know, to go to Japan and have sushi for the first time and watch the audience. We arrived at the airport in Tokyo, and there was this commotion and screaming, and we thought something happened. We went, oh, my God, what's going on? And it was explained to us that that was for us.
Wow.
And it was just the oddest experience. And then we would perform in front of the audience, and we were used to the behavior of the American audiences, and they would all sit in their seats and all clap politely. We were like, what's going on here? But that was just how they do it.
Hmm. Are any of your brothers and sisters still in business, show business?
No, they aren't.
Mm, wow. Any opportunity maybe for a reunion down the road?
Well, we had our first show together in 20-something years last year when I re-released the CD that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We did a show at B.B. King's Blues House at Universal City Walk.
Oh.
And we had such a good time, and I've been trying to arrange some sort of retro tour with other artists, and that may come together. It's, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but the calls are out there, and if we can put it together, it sure would be a blast.
There's some great stuff in this CD, by the way. It's called The DeFranco Family Heartbeat. It's a love beat, Save the Last Dance for Me, from DeFranco Entertainment. And again, you can get it right on the web at DeFranco.com. That's DeFranco.com. And there's some great nuggets on this CD. It's really got a lot of different styles on it.
Yeah, a lot of it. It's got all the songs from the first two albums. And then I put a couple of bonus tracks on. One is Drummer Man, that disco version
right.
that I was telling you about.
Yeah.
And another one that was supposed to be on our second album called G-Baby. That's a big band flavored song. And ultimately they felt it didn't fit, you know, the album. But I always loved that song, so definitely had to include it.
Well, there's some great stuff. Heartbeat, It's a Love Beat is a great song, but there's even some stuff that I think is better on here, and I'm recommending everybody to go on to that site, DeFranco.com, and get yourself a copy and say hi to Tony while you're there. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to connect with us today at PMPnetwork.com.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You take care of yourself.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.